This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
G&D here on The Fan. Pete Medhurst in for G. That's Grant Paulson if you're scoring at home, and he is home. He was scuffling yesterday. I mean, he was guzzling tea and water and cough drops, and you could just tell.
And perhaps the thought of Chad Dukes's rant was in the back of his mind saying, you really don't have to be here if you're that miserable and make everybody else sick.
Mm. And here's me with my face about, I don't know, inch and a half away from the microphone that he was breathing into hot and heavy yesterday.
It is so, rather close.
In the words, I believe, Tommy, of Goldberg, you're next. In a way,
you need to go get one of Tommy's wipes, place it around your wind mic screen there for a minute or so during one of the commercials, and just kind of let it go to work there on that windscreen.
Now, those fumes are probably a little toxic, Britney Spears style, but it's probably better than...
Could keep you from going home and infecting a wife and two kids.
Yeah. Oh, dude, we've had the endless circle. This is true. I'm at CVS. It's an exciting story, Pete, so buckle up. CVS, like January 20th. Okay, it's somewhere around there. Oh, yeah, this is big right here.
My favorite music on this show, by the way.
What game show is this from, by the way? It's like that time, you know, early 80s, where guys had the long, thin microphones, and everyone's still smoking on the set somehow. Like, to me, I used to watch the Game Show Network in college all the time. I watched the bleep out of Card Sharks.
I love game shows. I should know this one.
Match Game?
No. Match Game is that's a easy one.
Did you have fun? I had fun. I actually had fun. Dating game? I don't know. Who knows? Point of the dude's story is, all right, I'm there at CVS at the pharmacy on like January 20th, 21st, something like that. And I'm waiting in line like every other schlub, and everybody's coughing and sneezing, and they look miserable like a Theraflu commercial. And I get to the front, and I'm like, picking up prescription, here's my stupid thing. And the woman behind the counter, pharmacist, goes, are you running a prescription drug ring?
In other words, she's seen you a time or two.
And I go, I'm just not ready for that kind of assault. I'm not ready for that kind of question.
What if your answer was yes, though?
And I went, I'm sorry? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't expect that. You expect, is your insurance the same? Is your address the same? She goes, are you running a prescription drug ring? And I was like, I'm sorry?
You should have fired back. Are you trying to be unemployed?
And I was like, what?
That's a rather insulting question and aggressive.
And so I go, She goes, I'm just asking, are you running a prescription drug ring of some kind? Are you selling prescription drugs? And I went, no. She goes, because this is the fifth time you've been here in 2020. Five different prescriptions I'd picked up just in January.
Danny's out on the street corner selling amphicillin.
Yeah. Me and amoxicillin. I'm doing something. The thing that my kids won't take.
But five times isn't really that crazy.
She was just joking.
Yeah.
And obviously, and I didn't get it right away, but she turned the screen around and showed me. So it was like two ear infections, two strep throats, and then one mystery thing that we weren't sure what happened.
Well, at least you don't have the coronavirus or flu, which has obviously been terrible here. What you've had is relatively mild compared to what some people have gone through.
Yeah, there's been a flu. There's been, as I said, maybe that was the other thing, but there's nothing, no antibiotic for that. But the ear infections, the strep throat, I mean, whatever, it stunk.
Which is standard stuff that comes with having young kids.
Of course it does.
Like you do.
Oh, yeah.
If they're in any kind of school environment whatsoever.
Yeah, it is nasty, as Cleveland used to say on Family Guy. So you're not going to care about this, Pete, and we'll do some Jordan Reed here in a second. We'll talk some Caps at 11:30. One of my favorite video game series, and again, I pre-warned you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I said pre-warn. That's what my southern cousin does. She goes, I just want to pre-warn y'all. Like, that's the nature of a warning. A warning is advanced. You don't need to pre-warn anybody. That's a warning before the warning. She goes, I just want to pre-warn y'all. Like, just warn us. All you have to do is warn us. I warned you you weren't going to care about this. But Gearbox, one of my favorite video game developers, makes Borderlands. It's a really, really fun series of games. They're first-person shooter games, Pete. They're funny. They're enjoyable. They're just well-crafted and they're good. They're making a movie. The Borderlands, in addition to some movie studio, I think it's Lionsgate, are making a movie. And here's what always happens. Video game movies announced. Fans of video game are initially excited about the movie. Then there's the phase where we remember there's no good video game movie. The best one is Mortal Kombat, probably, and it's like campy and kind of stupid, but it's a lot of fun now. It's very quotable, and Raiden's awesome, and Scorpion's cool, and Johnny Cage punches Goro in the huevos. Like, that's the movie. All of them are crappy. Why do we get excited still about these sorts of things? So the announcement comes out that Eli Roth, he's like the master of the medium to low budget horror slasher type film. That's got a lot of like tourists and, you know, drinking water, like, what, you know, like those like weird names and concepts. Yeah. What do they call it, Tom? What's the movie?
Well, it's Blumhouse Productions.
Yeah, that's what he does. So he does that sort of crap. He's making the movie. He's announced as director, but then the president of Gearbox, I know I'm riveting everybody, got in trouble because he prematurely announced, but ahead of some festival that's going to come up. Is there anything like that in your life? That was the long way of getting to that, where you're excited about it and you know it's going to suck, but you still get excited anyway.
Not really.
Good talk.
Not really. Everything that I do is,
that's
my
fault.
Relatively boring. You know, I live a boring existence. You know, I'm an American last night till, you know, 9:30. Yeah. I drive by the vice president's house on the way home. I wave to him and, you know, I go home and go to bed.
So, you know? the life of a nerd, and again, I bristle with this. I'm not really a nerd. Nerds are good at school. I'm a dork. But for common parlance, people say nerd. The life of a dork like myself is you just wait for trailers. You get excited about them, and then you get let down. That's pretty much your life.
Well, the question to me would be, is there a character in the video game that is worth making a movie around? Because once you make a movie around a character, yeah, as we see, you're going to want to continue to make movies around that character, you know, more and more, because what's the sense of making one movie, especially if you're going to kill off a character and yet he's still going to exist in the video game? That would not be, you know.
No, that's a good point. You need the symmetry. I mean, it's weird. Like, the adaptation, for example, Tom and I were talking about this before the show. Stephen King churns out content. That dude stays writing and grinding and putting on different, like, a whole swath of content, right?
He has a creative mind like no other. Whether it's, even when it's dark, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's still incredibly creative.
So they did with Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba. It's Idris or Idris. I never say the right way. They did The Dark Tower. And The Dark Tower is, in my opinion, the coolest thing Stephen King ever did. It's this series of 200-page books, but it's this huge arc and it's awesome. They condensed all of them into one movie and it stunk. It stunk. It was 90 minutes of crap, okay? And that broke my heart because I love the content. We're talking about this before the show. The Outsider, another Stephen King novel. It's on HBO. It started off like gangbusters, and we could see it's going downhill, like those guys at the Olympics that are skiing down super fast, and the dude, like, they get all...
ski jumping.
Yeah, ski jumping, but they get all
phenomenal,
like, stiff.
Event.
They get all stiff, and they jump through the air, and they get all... That's what it's doing. It's going downhill.
Got to lean forward, get your skis pointed.
And it's frustrating. But that's all we do, is we look forward to stuff, then we get disappointed. And we don't learn our lesson, us dorks. So I'm sitting here, I find myself going, nice, dude, they got Eli Roth. And then I remember, every one of these movies has stunk. You couldn't have measured with any kind of instrument the level of excitement I had over Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo in the Super Mario Brothers movie. And it sucked more than anything has ever sucked. It was like this weird dystopian future. And they even got Dennis Hopper to be the bad guy, and he was awful.
Well, it's everything an artificial enthusiasm that's created by the gamer and the numbers, obviously the incredible number of gamers that play these games. So you do get excited about it because you love the game.
Right.
You're into the video game, but then it just doesn't translate to the big screen.
None of these movies are good. People are telling me, what about, you can tweet me at Funny Danny,
Pete Medhurst.
What about Tomb Raider? What about Tomb Raider, guy? The Alicia Vikander, if I'm saying her name correctly, movie, underwhelming. The weird Angelina Jolie, poorly affected British accent where John Voight shows up for like 6 seconds. Daniel Craig's in it and they squandered him. The guy that played Khaleesi's right-hand man is in it as the bad guy. underwhelming at best. And I'm a Tomb Raider guy. All right. I'll get back on track. I apologize. Jordan Reed. Not cleared for a long time. All of a sudden cleared when there's a story about him not being cleared. The whole thing is weird, if I may say so. Discuss his future, Redskins legacy. We'll do that at 11:18 next on The Fan. Guys, Danny Ruggia here from my pals at Ted Bertford. I want you to have the same experience that I did, which was a tremendous, terrific buying experience. It's the best, Jerry, the best. Here's the deal. They've been in business for over 60 years now. 60 years, which is awesome, okay? You don't just luck box your way into doing it for 60 years. You treat people very well. They understand you're not a professional car purchaser. They understand that you don't have infinite amounts of time or resources for this. They know. That's why they treat you so well. You go to a restaurant that you like, you're likely to go back, right? You go to a restaurant that you hate, you're probably not going to go again. I had three great experiences at Ted Bertford. When it's time for my fourth car, guess where I'm going? You guess the Ted Bertford. And what they want you to do right now is leap over your first two payments. That's right. Leap year, leap over your first two payments. So how about this? 2019 F-150 truck from your F-150 HQ. $15,500 off the MSRP. Leap over those first two payments. 2020 Ford Explorer up to $10,000 below the MSRP. And same thing with the payments. 2019 Ranger, $8,000 under the MSRP. And you can leap over those first couple of payments. You got to go see my guys at Tedbert Ford because they're the best. They're in Fairfax, Chantilly. Click away at Tedbert.com. Go and tell them Danny sent you. Stat nerds. You can check out FanGraphs, where the Zips projections are now live. Zips, developed by Dave Zimbrowski, I believe, take into account the previous or all the seasons in a player's career, age 24 to 38. So guys that are younger than that, their arc is still going up. You don't necessarily weigh those in a different way. Guys that are in their primes or diminishing primes, more recent data is counted and weighed more heavily. So the predictions for the Nationals are out. A couple numbers I want to throw at you, Pete. Juan Soto for Zips. Usually these kinds of projections water down what's expected a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Juan Soto, 295 batting average, 36 homers, 115 runs, 126 RBI, 113 walks, on-base percentage, 413, OPS, 978. A.K.A. a monster season for Soto.
I think the walk total could be even higher depending on how the people around him hit.
Well, one of the candidates, Trey Turner, 282, 20 homers, 98 runs, 44 stolen bases. If you get that from Trey Turner, I actually think it's a little bit underwhelming because a lot's being counted on because everyone wanted to talk about because he missed so much time with his jacked up finger last year mm-hmm. that he got fixed. He was on 30-homer pace. I think you need him to be a producer as well as a table setter in this lineup. I really do.
Well, in that case,
to make up for it.
In that case, what we've been reading from Jesse Docherty and others is perhaps Robles at leadoff and Trey Turner in the number three spot. If he hits in the number three spot, he has a chance to play to those numbers, though the stolen base number would be
It's got to go down.
It's got to go down because you're if Soto's hitting behind him, you're going to want Juan to hit through that open right side if Turner's on base.
Here's what I'm doing. I don't think Robles can handle leadoff. I think there's too much swing and miss still. I don't think there's enough plate discipline. And it's not a knock. He's 22 years old now. You know, this is we're spoiled by Juan Soto. We forget that this isn't normal.
Right.
Right? Your scale should be Robles. He's still feeling his way. He's already a Gold Glove caliber center fielder, and he will grow into a more complete offensive player. I think eventually he's a 20-35 guy. He's going to hit 265, 270, something like that. But right now, way too many strikeouts, way too much chase. Tough putting him at the bottom of the order because pitchers are going to throw nothing but junk with the pitcher ahead of him. But them's the breaks in a competitive lineup. Adam Eaton's my leadoff guy. Trey Turner is going to hit second for me, so I can go a little left, right, left. And I hit Juan Soto third, okay? Or I could flip-flop him because both Eaton and Soto are good against lefties. Especially, you know, you're going to get a good at bat from both those guys, and I could have Turner hit third or do something funky like that. But for me, my opening day lineup is Eaton leading off, Turner hitting two, Soto hitting three, probably Kendrick at four, and, you know, maybe Starlin Castro five, maybe depending on who you're facing, maybe it's Thames six, something like that, and then you go and then you fill the rest out.
Only problem is with Howie Kendrick probably only playing 120, maybe 125 games, who hits behind Juan in those other games.
The thing that nobody's talking about, a couple people have written about this. I heard Todd Dybas this morning on with the Yankees. discussing this. There was a second half renaissance for Starlin Castro.
There was.
And the Nationals bought in that that was not a mirage. Now, the last time they did something like this, a guy named Daniel Murphy showed up and raked for them. People thought it was bull. People thought that this was just one ridiculous hot streak where he changed the world, leading the Mets to the World Series, just mashing the way that he did. And he was up for batting titles. He was, you know, a superstar for them for a couple years before injuries and age took their toll. They're counting on that for Castro, whose first half was bottom of the barrel, stink fest. Second half, over 300, 40 homer pace. I think they just got a steal here. And maybe that's your cleanup hitter. Maybe that's the guy. They're hoping the guy that showed up in the second half for the Marlins, a team that was out of it in April, is now your first division cleanup hitter having a career renaissance for dirt cheap. I think that's what they hope.
Well, I mean, at some point, you sign somebody with the intent that that's the player that you're getting. I mean, that's what you're hoping every time you sign someone like that. And I think there'll be a motivation here for Castro, the fact that he's moving to a club that obviously is a championship ball club, and there's an expectation that comes here. And he said he came here because of Davey Martinez. So you would expect the player to be motivated, and what better motivation than to potentially hit behind Juan Soto? I mean,
you're going to get some pitches to hit.
You're going to get some pitches to hit and have opportunity to drive in runs because, I mean, Soto's constantly going to be on base, even if via the walk, if anything else.
I get frustrated. I understand how we got to the point that Anthony Rendon left. And Grant and I disagree about this. He sort of puts a lot of that on Rendon. To me, this was a Nationals set of decisions throughout that led to Rendon behaving the way that he did at the very end. Right? Where once they finally submitted the last offer that had a bunch of deferred money, Rendon was like, okay, that's it, I'm leaving. And he didn't tell anybody that specifically, but he wasn't, calling the Nationals back and letting them know I got an offer from the Angels. The last straw, I think, was when they gave him that last offer that had deferred money in it. They had a chance for years to work something out and get it done. They bet against him, in effect, having a career year in his walk year. When you let a guy get to a walk year and he has a career year, you've now lost control. You had control before, you lost it. It's a reasonable gamble, by the way. A guy that was oft injured, a guy that had missed time consistently, never quite fulfilled this superstar MVP caliber potential that he had last year leading this team to the World Series. I understand how it happened. To me, the time to be angry was before, not at the end. At the end, I go, I get how we're here. You replaced Anthony Rendon, in effect, with Starlin Castro. You better be right. You better be right that this guy you're buying.
And you better hope that one of your prospects that you develop in the form of Carter Kieboom at least gives you something.
Yep.
Gives you it doesn't have to be even better than average season in year one. It just has to be a reputable Major League Baseball season. Plus, remember, you're getting Castro 2 years younger than Murphy than when Murphy got here as well. So you're hoping there's still plenty in the tank, but remember, Castro debuted back at age 20.
Oh yeah,
so, I mean, he was been the next around big thing, yeah. a long time. So, you know, look, there's no question it's a gamble, but there's no reason. I mean, there's nothing to say that maybe that was Anthony Rendon's peak this past season.
Oh sure,
too.
Yeah,
perhaps the same things that hampered him in his time with the Nationals could hamper him with the Angels. There could be injury. And that would be something that you would have to deal with. And if you signed a guy to a blockbuster deal, you'd be aggravated that he wasn't living up to the course of the contract. But I think also now, if you're a player, you know what the negotiating tactic is with the Nationals organization.
If you're okay with it, you can sign here.
We've
if you're not, you're going somewhere
some
else.
Some great players, Danny, accept those tactics and say, that's great, I'm going to sign here. And we've seen some players balk at it. And they walk away.
Speaking of walking away, there was a pulse that Jordan Reed should do that exact thing. We didn't get to it. I got distracted by some baseball stats. Pete Metters, Danny Ruiz, Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We're going to discuss Jordan Reed, his legacy in Washington, what should happen next, and where he might end up. That's next on The Fan. Well, as I was going to talk about this, frustrated me the entire morning. I ruined Dar's morning. I ruined Thom's morning. By not remembering, and all I could do is sit here and pout and try to remember what the hell it was I was going to tell everybody that I thought was pretty funny, but now I can't remember that. Maybe I'll talk about that. Maybe I won't. Who knows? You have to tune in and find out. Now, but teasing this, let's get into it, Pedro. Jordan Reed, not cleared from NFL concussion protocol for months and months and months and months. this becomes a story again. How strange was this? Was it strange to you, or is it just me that it was strange to? The story comes out, hey, by the way, Jordan Reed's still not cleared. Basically, 36 hours later, oh, Jordan Reed's cleared now. The word comes out. It was like, let's go check on Jordan. Oh, now he seems fine. Was that odd to you in any way, how that all played out?
Odd in terms of when it was mentioned, but perhaps the question is, who is ultimately responsible for clearing Jordan Reed? Did he have to be seen by Redskins doctors because he's technically under contract to the Redskins still? Or is there an NFL component of this that has to come in and clear him? In other words, the Redskins are saying, hey, we're trying to make a decision over here. What do we do? And then eventually somebody tells them, well, you have to get him looked at by this person. Well, then that person looks at him and, okay, he's cleared. He's ready to go. So, I mean, I don't know what the contract language is, and perhaps that's why it was critical they find out whether he is cleared or not from the concussion protocol. Perhaps there's some kind of NFLPA part of this that you can't cut the player in a situation based, you know, in terms of his money. Maybe he gets a little bit more of it or less. So I think that was basically the case where they just had to get the right person to look at Jordan Reed, clear him. So now that he's, quote, cleared and free to go, if you release him, it's just like a normal release. He's free right to now go, not necessarily technically as damaged goods.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some sort of, you know, language or where it's important and, you know, certain boxes have to be checked, et cetera, when it comes to medical stuff. I don't know blank from Shinola. I have no idea. I just know that it seemed really weird to me that the report comes out as a reminder, hey, I know we haven't been talking about Jordan Reed much lately, but he's still not cleared. And then the next day, actually turns out he is cleared. It's almost like it just felt like somebody read that and went, oh, crap, I haven't checked on Jordan in a while. And the doctor went and looked, trying to flash that.
Well, remember, you had a switch of medical staff, too.
Yeah, that's true.
So that could be certainly a component in this. You've had a switch of head coach. So, but what it does is it does coincide, Danny, with the timing of the other releases that the team is now making,
right?
And they probably said, hey,
I'd like to do this.
This is one we've got to get to, so let's get this resolved with the player so we know what the deal is, and if we do release him, other clubs know what the deal is.
They're going to save $8.5 million in cap space with a $1.8 million cap hit by releasing him. To me, this is a no-brainer. It stinks because Jordan Reed, by all accounts, seems like a good guy, smart guy, nice guy, family guy. Not, you know, no complaints about him off the field.
Guy always played hard when he was healthy.
It's that.
Healthy is the question. I mean, 12-6-13, you know, over his last three full seasons in Washington, and last year he never got to the field. You know, never played 16 games in any of his NFL seasons for the Redskins. And, you know, that's what you look at that 2015 year when he caught 87 balls and had the 11 touchdowns. He did that in 14 games.
Oh, yeah. He was amazing.
He did that in 14 games.
That performance against Dallas with his busted up shoulder. In that shootout of the game.
Superhuman, man.
He was amazing. Now, how will you remember him? Because here's how I'll remember him. And this is the weird spot of being a lifelong fan now on the radio, right? Side number one, the analyst. You go, it's frustrating. Great player. Seems like a great guy, et cetera, right? And it's just a bummer. It's the bad part of the NFL. The Redskins fan, Danny Ruye, the guy that still just reads every column, every article, every nugget, every morsel that I have a never-ending quest for information about the team that I love so much. Thank goodness this is over.
Absolutely.
Thank goodness this is over. The amount of stealing from Ted Leonsis, the amount of pixels on this workout this year is different. Now he's doing ballet, or he started eating broccoli to help his vision or care, whatever. Go away. Enough. Enough waiting for this guy to be healthy.
You know why, Danny?
One season, over 680 yards. One. And the rest of the time, waiting for some magic to be recreated. It wasn't going to happen. It's never going to happen. Good riddance. Now, that's the mean fan part. Again, the first part is, what a bummer. I feel bad for that guy. And I really do, by the way. Oft injured, can't get right. He's tried so hard. It just doesn't work out for him. And the best thing for the team is to move on. Redskins fan, Danny, goes, somebody else's problem, please.
You know why? Because every time he was on the field, he was your Rob Gronkowski. He was your Travis Kelce. You had that player in your midst. You had a player that could dominate at his position as one of the very best in the league on a team that virtually, outside of Trent Williams maybe when he was going well.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the best in the league at his position. So you're like, okay, we've got a great left tackle, and we've got a dominant tight end. We've got a guy that people cannot cover. They have to double him. They have to do exotic things to try and keep him from catching the ball. Oh, you know what that's going to do? That's going to open it up for the rest of our offense. And, oh, wait, he's not playing this week. Darn. Oh, wait, Jordan Reed, questionable for this week. And when Craig Hoffman comes on the fan, I've got the inactives for today. Jordan Reed not playing. And everybody on the pregame show goes, oh. You know, that's what it became every week.
I know this is callous. This because these are people. These are lives. These are guys trying to, you know, go play a sport has 100% injury rate. I understand all that. I'm just telling you, as a fan, there's nothing now as a Redskins fan that I've been conditioned to reflexively get irritated at. I mean, the forever of these stories, the degenerative knees of Malcolm Kelly or whoever the guy, Rocky McIntosh,
yeah,
who the Redskins are the only team that had a good medical grade on him. Just so sick of this. So sick of it. Now, if the team's winning, you don't notice this stuff. You don't care. Right? But it started.
But he was a key to them winning. That's the problem, because he was a dominant player.
But my ire, it's irrational. It's over the top. I understand all that. I'm just telling you, as a fan, nothing frustrates me more from a player perspective, let alone with their front office or Dan Snyder, all that kind of stuff, but just from the week-to-week grind of following an NFL team. Okay, I'm sure it's a grind, by the way. It's a real challenge, real adversity I go through following the team. Anyway, I get so bothered by this. Constantly the injured, constantly told that it's going to be fine, constantly told that this is different, and it's not different.
Well,
how do you think
How do you think Carolina Panther fan feels the last couple of years with Luke Kuechly and with Cam Newton? I mean, they've gone through the exact same thing. You have two guys that are as polished at their position as anybody, and unfortunately, they're injured. They're not playing. And that's frustrating. You wait every week with bated breath, the injury report. On Thursday, did he practice today? Was he limited? Was he at least limited? Is he questionable? You know, does that mean on Sunday we can play? And then pregame showtime comes. Hey, everybody, here's the inactives.
And once again,
Cam Newton not playing this week for your Carolina Panthers.
Started for me with Steven Alexander's high ankle sprain that kept him out for 13 weeks.
Dude.
Oh, I'll never forgive it.
Big tight end from Oklahoma. That dude was a player.
That's Pete Matters. I'm Danny Ruye. This is Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Double play is next. Beltway Blitz at high noon. We got a lot of important information. We want to shovel down your gullets. Double play at 11:47. Okay, what's going on in our lives? It has nothing to do with sports. I got to cede some time to Pete. He's got something going on in his life. It's Danny Ruye Netflix show review time. The Witcher. Where do I begin with this? Henry Cavill's a dreamboat. I always think he gets underrated. He gets lost in the Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth shuffle. Okay? Everybody likes Ryan Gosling, who is 147 soaking wet, and he makes that kind of that half smirk face at you ladies. People need to talk about Henry Cavill. He is so handsome. He's so in shape. He's a pretty good actor, I think. I'm a Henry Cavill fan. He's got that charming British accent and like a cool perspective on his roles. Dreamy eyes, jacked, huge fan. I put him in the Tom Hardy school of, we're not talking enough about how attractive these guys are. Because Tom Hardy's such a skilled actor. So that's The Witcher. You get a couple other people that you've never heard of. You've seen some of these actors and actresses before. Here's the deal. I played the most recent Witcher game on the PS4 because I'm not popular socially. And I liked it. Game was awesome. I can't imagine watching this show if I didn't have even that much background. They don't wait. They're not messing around. They just take you and throw you in the deep end. And you're supposed to pick it up. Dar, have you watched it? You've watched The Witcher.
I've watched it. I told you to finish it.
Of course I did.
Let me just tell you. I had zero background on the show. Zero. I loved it.
So it's huge. You get battles. You get Game of Thrones style stuff. Now, Game of Thrones in the early years, Dar, before I draw your ire, took its time and gave you character development and let you know the scene. You felt like you were part of this history. You don't feel that, I don't think, with this show, right? Because they just start telling you the names of the different kingdoms, the names of the different people, and you're going, wait, who is that person? Wait, who is that again? They never flush anybody out, and they just go really, really fast. A lot of stuff happens. Three main characters. You're talking Geralt of Rivia, who is the Witcher, that's Henry Cavill's character, a young girl named Ciri, and not S-I-R-I, okay? Don't make that mistake. You don't ask her for directions or any of that crap, okay? And then Yennefer, who is a witch, kind of magical presence sort of deal, okay? They don't suspend disbelief either. You're dumping right in. It's magic. It's monsters. It's all sorts of stuff. It follows their arcs and how they all sort of intertwine. It's like a big pretzel. It's a roller coaster ride of these three characters. I didn't really understand what the hell was going on a lot of the time, and I had some baseline of information. But it was beautiful. It was huge. It was a lot of fun. And Henry Cavill's a dreamboat. What would you add, Dar?
When it all comes together at the end, it makes it all worth it. I know there were some people that didn't really like the storylines and how they took place, but once it comes together, it all makes sense and it's all really, really good.
I wonder who this show is for. And here's what I mean. When you get a Making a Murderer or a Stranger Things or a Narcos or whoever, you could pull from every subgroup of an audience, right, who will go, I'll check that out, and it becomes a viral phenomenon. This show is for me, a giant dork who is just so fat and gross and sweaty and has bad haircuts. It's for me. I don't know who they can pull among the casual fans. I enjoyed it. I had fun. But, my wife's never going to watch that. You know, Grant's never watching this.
Well, remember when he said he would watch it because it had Henry Cavill in it? And then you explained what it was, and he immediately was out.
Oh, of course he's out. And I don't blame him for that. This is a lot to ask for a non-fantasy person, right? If you go Lord of the Rings, not for me. First of all, you're wrong. But if you say not for me, there's no way you can do this. There's no way.
My wife enjoyed it.
She did?
She did.
Is it because Henry Cavill's just so awesome?
No, she got into Game of Thrones at the end. Mm. Well, the end of the good stuff. Right, and then the stuff. Stayed through the bad stuff.
So overall, I'm giving it a 6 out of 10 carbohydrates. And that's low. That's going to be low for you, Dar. That's a lower score just because they don't explain anything.
I really thought you were going to be a lot higher on this.
It's beautiful. It's fun. I like watching Geralt of Rivia just wreck S. And he's the Butcher of Blaviken. Okay, toss a coin to your Witcher. A lot of quotable things, Law of Surprise. I came into the studio and claimed that the other day when I grabbed a piece of food. But 6 out of 10. I wish they explained some more stuff. Pete, I didn't leave you enough time. You got to go quick.
Going quick is never a problem for me, Danny. I can assure you of that. Appreciate the Touchdown Club of Annapolis tonight. They're going to have me back, as always, to be the MC. Looking forward to this. We're going to honor Javon Leak from Maryland, Malcolm Perry from Navy, Coach Mike Loxley of Maryland will be there, Kenny Amatalolo, the Navy head coach, will be there, and for me, it will be an opportunity at the beginning of our banquet tonight. We're going to honor former House Speaker, the late Mike Bush, who preceded over the Maryland House of Representatives for a long time, and back when I was a young, up-and-coming whippersnapper, Mike Bush was sitting behind a backstop one day when I was playing baseball for the United Youth Club, and it became the start of a very good relationship. He was obviously the man that represented my district for several years when I was growing up as a member of Southern Anne Arundel County. And Mike Bush was someone that meant a lot to my life growing up and somebody that I wanted to be like. So I get to stand up in front of a bunch of people and say some really nice things about him coming up tonight. I want to thank the Touchdown Club of Annapolis for having me back again to be the MC of what is usually a great night. A lot of great Maryland show up and Navy fans show up, and we're looking forward to it again coming up this evening.
That is neat, buddy. And have you done that before? You done that in the past?
In fact, last year it was Mike Loxley's first, and I interviewed him to use for my show at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And I interviewed him back in the kitchen area, and it was great. Coach Loxley said, this is the first time I've ever been interviewed in a kitchen.
Hopefully not the last. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you say about that. That's pretty sweet, though. Double play, that concludes that. Very different styles in the double play there. Me, an obscure video game turned into a fantasy TV show. Pete, a real-life event. You could see the difference between us, real adult, and then me sitting over here. It's Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Pete is in for GP, who was out sick. Coming up, second half of the show, rather. Beltway Blitz is up next. We want to talk Trent Williams, Ron Rivera, and Dan Snyder, and how they all intertwine together. Next, Beltway Blitz, right here. We'll be right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.